From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Even though Florida lawmakers are out of session, the back and forth over plans to cut property taxes goes on.
It's not a true $50,000 exemption. It's really only about a $39,000 or $40,000 exemption.
Also this week, a new affordable housing project in Southwest Florida gives some prospective homeowners reason for hope.
When I got my approval date, that was emotional for me when I went home and shared it with my kids.
We'll also revisit the big gains made by Democrats in Florida's special election this week, and we'll travel to a hurricane-damaged mangrove swamp to see how it's recovering. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and our end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. Florida CFO Blaze Ingolia this week has continued to message in favor of eliminating property taxes. Tristan Wood reports Ingolia did not mention all pieces of how Florida's property tax structure works.
During his press conference Tuesday, Ingolia says local governments have had a tax windfall, as Florida property taxes statewide have risen over the last few years. He also says current exemptions are not enough.
The first $25,000 is exempt, the old exemption. The next $25,000 is actually taxed. The next $25,000 is an exemption, but there's an exemption to the exemption for school boards. So it's not a true $50,000 exemption. It's really only about a $39,000 or $40,000 exemption.
He did not mention an important component of that program that has reduced the shock longtime homesteaded homeowners have felt. The Florida Save Our Homes program caps the amount a home's taxable value can go up each year to 3%, or to the Consumer Price Index. That means as home values have gone up, longtime home buyers have seen their tax bill increase slower than more recent home buyers. Local governments in Republican and Democrat-leaning areas in the state have been criticizing the push to reduce property taxes, saying it would lead to services being reduced. Ingolia criticized that messaging.
Local governments are going to try to excuse away their spending and convince you that they need every single dollar that they have taken in. They are going to say that they need every dollar in order to fund government to deliver services to you. And I'm here to tell you that is not true.
What exactly the property tax reduction proposal will look like on the ballot is unclear. The legislature will still have to call a special session to draft a language, and one has not yet been announced. I'm Tristan Wood.
Affordable housing is one of the preeminent issues in Florida. WGCU's Bryant Monte highlights a project in Naples that aims to build more cost-conscious housing.
The sounds of progress to help alleviate the gap between what families can and can't afford. Lisa Lefko is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Collier County.
Better than 50% of our workforce are in the lowest wage sectors. And in a community like this where housing costs are so high, we have a huge gap between wages and cost of living. And so the crunch comes to reality in terms of housing.
A recent study from the Schimberg Center for Housing Studies at the University of Florida finds that Collier County consistently exceeds the average statewide prices for homes, especially in an area where low-income residents make up the largest group of cost-burdened households.
Here in Collier County, we've been at a deficit of more than 10,000 units for decades. So that's a lot to make up. Habitat for Humanity here in Collier County is this community's sole provider of access to affordable home ownership. So the need here just continues to be critical, almost to crisis level.
Habitat for Humanity's home buying program meets potential buyers where they are financially. If they qualify, the mortgage is no more than 30% of the family's income. Laniqua Gonzalez has worked and lived in Naples for 15 years. She was recently approved and is excited about becoming a homeowner at Habitat for Humanity's latest development, Las Palmas.
We've been praying since I put in the application, and when I got my approval date, That was emotional for me when I went home and shared it with my kids. My daughter was screaming for joy. They can't wait to have their own rooms. And it's just been a beautiful journey. And I think it'll probably be more emotional when I get the key.
Las Palmas spans roughly 17 acres and will have 210 new affordable homes in North Naples. The family-friendly condo-style floor plan will have 3 or 4 bedrooms. As a part of the program, buyers invest 250 to 500 hours of sweat equity time to help pay for their share of the investment. Volunteers, family, and friends can also roll up their sleeves and get dirty with it. Major funder Steve Off has been volunteering for Habitat for Humanity since Hurricane Irma in 2017.
What we love about this program is it's not a handout program. It's a lift-up program. You know, it's helping people who are very disadvantaged to get into a home and have a family in a family center that get back their dignity and, you know, their sense of ownership. And they're no longer victims, but, you know, they're part of the community.
Lefko has been with Habitat for Humanity for 25 years and shares what has kept her so dedicated.
The thing that absolutely keeps me so connected to the amazing, miraculous work that happens here are our home buyers. Hearing their stories of where they've come from, all that they have been through to be a part of this community, to participate in the economic fabric of this community, and then to be able to watch over the arc of time as they achieve great things. I also have the privilege of working with amazing volunteers.
For Laniqua, joy and hope come in the form of new beginnings and unlocked doors leading to new possibilities.
Naples is just truly unaffordable. And it's a great opportunity to have a home to call your own at an affordable price.
Families can start moving in by midsummer this year. I'm Bryant Monte.
Florida's supervisors of elections are alerting voters that unofficial voter registration cards sent by a third-party organization may arrive in mailboxes in the coming days. The mailings come from a group called the Voter Participation Center. Leon County Supervisor of Elections Mark Early says that while he supports the goal of registering voters, much of the information used by the third-party group is inaccurate or outdated. Early says anyone already registered to vote doesn't need to do anything, and anyone wanting to register to vote should contact the local election supervisor.
Some of these targeted mailings will be to the name of a pet or the name of a child in the household, and it looks kind of like it's coming from us, and so we get complaints every year about this.
Florida currently has nearly 13.4 million registered voters. The deadline to register for this August primary election is July 20th. Coming up on Capitol Report, Florida has been an overwhelmingly Republican state for quite a while, but a noted political expert says this week's special election may have signaled something of a turning point.
Florida Democrats, they'll look at these two special elections and say, look how much better we did, and we actually won these two races.
Meanwhile, speaking of turning points, it seems some Republicans are determined to shoot their own party in the foot.
Unfortunately, these incidents are not isolated. They cannot be allowed to exist. I mean, we have to make sure that they don't become normalized.
Americans are still having kids. They're just having fewer of them than they used to, and that's having some wide-ranging impacts.
Fewer students are entering the education system, and we especially, of course, then see these impacts in the earlier grades.
And years after a devastating hurricane, natural recovery is still taking place in a large swath of mangrove swamp, hopefully before another storm arrives.
You know, if we could get through 1 year without them, it would be tremendous, because that means everything can get back to its growth.
Two Democrats flipped legislative seats from red to blue in Tuesday's special elections. Emily Gregory won the Florida House district that a Republican won by 19 points just 2 years ago. Her district contains President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago. And Brian Nathan flipped a Tampa Senate seat pending a potential recount. WUSF's Douglas Soule talks with UCF political science professor Aubrey Jewett about the results.
Florida Republicans have dominated in recent years. Some in politics have even said the Florida Democratic Party is dead. So, Professor, how notable are these special election results?
I think it's pretty important for Florida Democrats, for sure, because they have been on a long losing streak now for some years. But this shows that the Democratic Party is still alive and kicking in Florida. This is part of a big trend that seems to be happening across the country and in Florida. And so bottom line is it gives Florida Democrats a reason for some optimism for the first time in a while as they're going into this election.
So do you think Florida Democrats have momentum?
I do think that Democrats have some momentum. I think for Florida Democrats, they'll look at these two special elections and say, look how much better we did. And we actually won these two races. And symbolically, to actually beat the Republican candidate who was endorsed by Donald Trump that actually contains Mar-a-Lago, which is like the winter White House or the Southern White House, however, you know, you want to describe it. That's got to feel extra good to a lot of Democrats.
Do you see any indication here of a broader national trend?
Most definitely. And it's not that Florida is causing the broader national trend. I think Florida is part of the broader national trend. We're at a stage in the election cycle where the president's party almost always loses seats and unpopular presidents lose even more, usually. And so that is what we have seen ever since President Trump got into office. He won re-election, but then if you look at his approval ratings, they have generally been declining among almost all polls. And so because President Trump is so unpopular and doing these things that the average American now doesn't like, you're seeing a backlash.
Now, the Republican Party of Florida says special elections aren't indicative of the general election. The party points to Tom Keene. Who is Tom Keene and why is he important?
Political scientist on average, we'll agree with that, that any particular special election is not necessarily a great predictor for how the next election will go in that particular district or just overall. And that's because when you have a special election, turnout is abnormally low. And with Tom Keene, yeah, he won a special election here in Central Florida. They went knocked on a bunch of doors, and he was a Democrat, of course, and he you know, took a Republican seat. But then the very next election cycle, he got beat. And Republicans took the seat back. Having said that, I think from a political analyst perspective, and certainly from the Democratic perspective, it's more than just this one or two special election victories. It is the fact that these special election victories have occurred, one, with big swings, and two, that many other special elections around the country have been very good for Democrats.
Governor Ron DeSantis has called a special session to potentially change Florida's congressional map. Do you think the special elections will make Republicans rethink redistricting?
I think they're still going to look into it. They still might even do it, but I will bet that it will not be quite as aggressive as it would have been. I have seen some people say, oh yeah, Republicans could pick up five more if they're very aggressive, leaving just three Democratic seats. But in order to do that, you have to create some Republican-leaning seats that aren't that much Republican. Okay, yeah, maybe they lean 3 or 4 points Republican or something like that, but they're not safe. It's possible you end up, instead of a gerrymander, you end up with what we might call a dummymander. You've tried to help yourself, but instead, you've ended up hurting your own party and you lose seats.
It was nice talking with you. Thanks for your time.
Bye-bye.
That was UCF political science professor Aubrey Jewett. I'm Douglas Soule in Tallahassee.
Floridians are reacting to reports of a leaked group chat involving members of Florida International University's Turning Point USA chapter and GOP leaders. The chat contained racist, anti-Semitic, misogynist, and homophobic messages. WLRN's Tim Padgett spoke with Brian Siegel, director of the American Jewish Committee, and Daniela Pierre, president of the Miami-Dade NAACP. They explore how something like this could surface in a region that often prides itself on diversity.
How stunned were you, Daniela, this month by what young conservatives at your alma mater were saying?
As we had an opportunity to review the news reports and the media and the messages in the chat, we were taken aback that even in this present day, that such vile rhetoric continues to emanate right here in South Florida, and especially at one of our long-standing public institutions known as FIU. We're very concerned, and we're looking for swift action as it relates to all that continues to be revealed.
What struck you most about the particular content in this chat group?
The violent attacks and harms that they're looking to willfully do to Black people and people of color, being emboldened to use the N-word so many times. And just to know that these are students, these are professionals that are a part of such hate.
Brian Siegel, last month, just before this latest chat content here was made public, you wrote an op-ed in the Miami Herald with the headline, "Miami must listen closely to the sound of anti-Semitism. It's getting louder." You led your article with a reminder that in January, a Miami nightclub DJ had played a Yee song glorifying Hitler, which young right-wing influencers in the crowd at that club had requested. You wrote that something that was, quote, once relegated to the margins is now asserting itself openly in public spaces. So were you really all that surprised by these latest chat group revelations here?
We know that, unfortunately, these incidents are not isolated. They cannot be allowed to exist. I mean, we have to make sure that they don't become normalized. We've seen this before. We've seen violent rhetoric growing, and we know that when violent rhetoric is normalized, that violence becomes much easier to rationalize.
Daniela, FIU President Jeanette Nunez has since confirmed that a university criminal investigation is underway into this chat group. The president of FIU's Turning Point USA chapter, Ian Valdez, has stepped down. The Miami-Dade Republican Party has condemned its secretary, Abel Carvajal, who set up the chat group, and it says it is in the process of removing him. But what more has to be done from here on out, in your opinion, to get at the root of this growing problem of young right-wing hate-mongering?
One, we definitely acknowledge the efforts that President Nunez has taken thus far, and we do believe much more can happen. We want to see the removal of Turning Point USA chapters from FIU campus and across all South Florida campuses. And those members who are and still associated with that should be expelled. Additionally, as it relates to race in our local community, we need to have more conversations about it. While those conversations are happening 365 in the Black community, it needs to be among all people across the diaspora, in all communities, all faiths, to have those conversations so we can break down those stigmas and be real about what's happening.
That was Miami-Dade NAACP President Daniela Pierre and American Jewish Committee Regional Director Brian Siegel speaking with WLRN's Tim Padgett. As Florida school districts predict continued dwindling enrollment, the steady decline in birth rates will contribute to the dramatic year-to-year student and budget loss. WLRN's Natalie LaRoche-Pietri reports.
The birth rate in Broward County is the lowest it's been since 2006, according to data from the Florida Department of Health. It's down in Miami-Dade and Palm Beach counties, too. Nationwide, the birth rate was 1.6 children per woman, the lowest in United States history.
Experts project that it is only going to continue dropping.
Tara Moon is a policy analyst at Future Ed, a nonpartisan education policy think tank at Georgetown University.
Fewer children are being born every year, so fewer students are entering the education system. And we especially, of course, then see these impacts in the earlier grades.
So why are women having less children? Viviana Alvarado Pacheco is the Senior Director of Research and Collective Impact at the Women's Fund Miami-Dade. She says a driving factor is financial stability and mobility.
Right now, if a single mom, for example, has an infant and a school-aged child, she needs to be making $95,000 a year. That means that she needs to make an hourly wage of $45. And our current minimum wage is less than $15 an hour.
In Broward County schools this year, there were more than 75,000 students in kindergarten through fifth grade. By the 2030 to 2031 school year, the district projects that group will shrink by almost 11,000 students. I'm Natalie LaRoche-Pietri in Weston.
U.S. Senator Ashley Moody is calling for Congress to pass the Stopping Citizenship Abuse and Misrepresentation, or SCAM, Act. Under the federal legislation, the citizenship of naturalized Americans who join terrorist organizations or become naturalized through fraud or deception could be revoked. Currently, citizenship can be taken away if it's obtained through the concealment or misrepresentation of facts. Moody, who's co-sponsoring the bill, cites multiple instances of naturalized citizens killing people within the past month as the reason for the legislation.
If you seek out citizenship in the United States of America, knowing you are going to use that, stay here, and then begin to affiliate with terrorist organizations or plot attacks on Americans, we cannot allow for that.
Under the SCAM Act, the government could revoke citizenship within 10 years of naturalization if an individual commits fraud against government programs, affiliates with designated terrorist organizations, or commits an aggravated felony or espionage offense. You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, much of Florida was once acres of swamp filled out along the coastline by lush mangrove forests. However, since the 1940s, it's estimated the Sunshine State has lost 84% of those important coastal barriers. WGCU's Samuel Brucker hit the waters and learned about the role these mangroves play during natural disasters and the efforts being made to restore them.
As Hurricane Ian barreled toward southwest Florida, Harry Keel, lead captain for the Tarpon Cove Beach and Racquet Club shuttle boat, secured the 45-foot vessel deep inside a narrow mangrove cove along the Cocoachee River in North Naples. Layering extra ropes, anchor lines, and thick bumpers, he braced the boat against what he knew would be a violent storm surge and hoped the natural barrier and his precautions would be enough. But they weren't.
We're thinking it probably went up 4, 5, maybe even 6 feet back there, as opposed to where we're sitting right now, which got the full brunt of 12 foot of surge plus some wave action on top, to the point where it filled up the swimming pool with a couple feet of water up there. Took one of the boats from here and deposited up on the shoreline up in the bocce court. That was an interesting one.
When the surge arrived, Keel says it tore through the 90-slip marina with relentless force. Docks splintered like matchsticks, boats tossed in every direction. Some owners managed to haul their vessels to safety before the storm, but 13 boats remained in the water, exposed to Ian's fury, two of which broke through the mangrove line.
Ian was a little special monster. In a lot of cases, the boats were okay. They're built really well. But, if the mangroves hadn't been here, the boats would have been over in the retention ponds over there, in the swimming pool, on the pool deck that's right above us.
Keel says the devastation would have reached far beyond the docks, likely slamming into the club's main building, which sustained light damage.
The mangroves at least created some sort of a fence where it stopped any of the debris from getting up there.
Keely Pfau, Coastal Watch Director at the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation, says mangroves act as a silent shield for coastal communities across southwest Florida. But she says many residents still underestimate just how critical mangroves are to the entire ecosystem.
Mangroves are super important, but they're kind of all connected with other habitats here on our barrier islands as well. Our barrier islands are literally our first line of defense just as a whole. Restoring all those habitats is going to make us more resilient as a barrier island and as a community.
Recovery for damaged mangroves, however, is measured in decades, not months. After hurricanes Milton and Helene in 2024, FAO says much of the tender mangrove growth that had begun sprouting after Ian was stripped away once again.
These mangroves, in order to have them be, you know, mature adult mangroves, usually takes about 10 to 15 years. So we're not even 4 years out from Hurricane Ian. So they really haven't had time to recover. So we're probably looking at another, you know, 2 decades worth of recovery if we, and that is if we don't have another large storm come through.
Melissa Keel, a lifelong Floridian, has weathered storms since the 1960s. She says those experiences fuel a determination to protect what stands between their home and the Gulf.
For someone who's lived through them, if we're getting one, it's not a good thing. You know, if we could get through 1 year without them, it would be tremendous, because that means everything can get back to its growth, you know, and people can get back to what the kind of activities that they want to do.
Harry Keel approaches rebuilding with a hard-earned perspective, valuing resilience over replacement.
Anytime something gets destroyed, everything gets built back, but it's better. It's stronger anyway.
Right.
And it's more resilient to the next load of things. But rebuilding can be done in just a short period of time.
FAO says rebuilding mangrove forests is not just possible, it's participatory, as these volunteers from Florida Gulf Coast University did in January on a Southwest Florida beach.
There's so much going on in the world that is negative, and we feel that we can't be a part of it or can't change it, it's just happening to us. We at SCCF, with our restoration programs, are trying to give people an actionable item to do. They can be a part of it. They can help us either by participating in our Adopt a Mangrove program, grow a mangrove at their home, or they can come out with us and get their hands dirty at one of our restoration events and put the plants in the ground.
Without community involvement, FAO warns the consequences may not be immediate, but they are inevitable.
If the mangroves go away, that sediment is going to sink down and we're going to start to lose shoreline. And with sea level rise, you might be living next to the water. I don't know what's going to happen in the next few decades of where our shorelines are going to be. So it might not impact you directly today, but it definitely could in 10 years.
Both Harry and Melissa Keel believe the future can change, but only if the community recognizes what's at stake and acts before the next storm forms offshore.
So you look at the other coast right now, up in the Outer Banks. Mm-hmm. You have all these homes that are literally washing into the ocean, but they put down the pilings and the water keeps coming up. You can't fool Mother Nature.
Yeah, really.
The best you can do is hope to survive along with her.
In North Naples, I'm Samuel Brucker.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Bryant Monte, Douglas Soule, Tim Padgett, Natalie LaRoche-Pietri, and Samuel Brucker. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week online and on air for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.